From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As we reported earlier, there's been jockeying between the U.S. and China over Africa, or more specifically, over trade with Africa. The visit earlier this week by U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to the African continent, including his meeting with the head of the African Union, provided a venue where Tillerson specifically addressed and challenged Africa's growing relations with China. Beijing responded at the National People's Congress, with Foreign Minister Wang Yi pointing out that China's relations with Africa do not involve the United States and need not create tensions between China and the U.S. Meanwhile, China has been moving across the world to up its game in its international relations, raising the profile of its global media. Dmitry Babich is a senior editor at the Russian news agency Sputnik, and he was again recently featured on China's global TV network, or CGTN, to discuss a number of international issues. We spoke with Dmitry Babich via Skype from Moscow on Friday. Dmitry, it's a pleasure to have you with us. And, you're an international star yet again. I noticed you all over Chinese television recently.
Thank you. Well, Chinese are obviously making an effort to make their diplomacy more vocal. Mm. It didn't get much traction in the United States, but right. The Chinese have increased their expenses on the foreign ministry and on kind of explaining their foreign policy by more than 15%. So it's a pretty substantial amount of money for them. Obviously, they are trying to explain their position, but I'm not sure it's going to be really effective, because my impression is that the Chinese, much like the Russian leadership until recently, they view the West, they view the United States and the U.S. rational partners, who just need to be explained that China is not dangerous, that China wants peaceful competition, that China is a lucrative trade partner. Well, the problem is that sensible people in the United States and in the EU understand it.
Right.
But the EU and the United States are not governed by pragmatic interests. Right. They're not governed by even by the presidents and the prime ministers. They're not governed by the voters. They're right. governed by an ideology now.
Yeah.
A rather crazy and radical ideology, which, for example, prompted the former British prime minister, David Cameron, to cut all the aid, all the economic aid to African countries where single-sex marriage has not been legalized. Mm. And to me, that's like the pinnacle of stupidity, you deny food aid to whole countries, to tens of millions of people, because these countries have not done something that the UK has been coming to for the last 400 or 500 years, since right. the times of Shakespeare.
Also since the time, and actually, what was the UK doing 400 or 500 years ago in its relations with Africa? I mean, let's take a look at the newfound wealth that allows the West to be so magnanimous and so focused on esoteric rights, rests on the stolen labor and mass murder of people in Africa, and the stolen land. And yet this is what they want to preach to Africans about human rights.
Well, I mean, it's just, if you look at it from a pragmatic, healthy point of view, I mean, it's much more stupid than even Catholics and Protestants killing right. each other in the 16th century.
Right.
Maybe in future, when some extraterrestrials ask this question, why did people die of hunger in several African countries? Because a certain prime minister in Britain was so unhappy about them not legalizing same-sex marriage that he cut food aid to them. He right. basically didn't give them the food that he had and that they needed. And all of that because of these very strange ideas that he had about marriage. I mean, it's ideology, but it's an ideology in a way a lot crazier than even the religious fanaticism or than, you know, the leftist variants of communism. It's just absurd. But the point is that the EU and the United States now are governed by these ideologies. You know, it's very hard to believe that for the Russian elite and for the Chinese elite. That's why the Chinese elite is spending a lot of money basically trying to explain to the United States that we are not Russia. The message that the former Chinese foreign minister Yan Zhechi had for Trump when he visited a few weeks ago was, you know, China is not Russia. We're not going to challenge you in Syria. We're not going to challenge you in other parts of the globe. We just want to be nice to you, and we're offering you lucrative business deals. So, you know, you have no reason to be afraid of us.
That's right.
The response from the United States was that basically if Trump could indeed formulate the U.S. foreign policy, the answer would be the problem is not that you're not dangerous to us. The problem is that you exist. You exist, and you are not governed by the same ideology by which we are governed. We want you to be governed by that same ideology. We want you to be absurd. We want you to cut aid to Africa because they haven't legalized same-sex marriage there, or because we view their electoral processes as less developed than ours. Well, our electoral processes are actually pretty shit because people have a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the end, but still we consider it to be very important and ideal for the world, and for that reason we are ready to waste tens of billions of dollars, if not hundreds of billions, on weapons, and we are ready to put the whole world in danger, and we will try to limit your influence in the sea that you rightly called South China Sea, but we don't care that it's South China Sea. For us, it's West American Sea. So basically, this kind of absurd attitude from the West is something that is now an axiom, but the Chinese and the Russian diplomats are just very unwilling to believe in this axiom. In that sense, the Russians are kind of more pragmatic simply because they've got a lot more punches from the United States than China in the last few years.
You know, it's an interesting, first of all, trying to understand what comes out of the West from either Moscow or Beijing, I agree, must be almost impossible because it's so riddled with contradiction. You know, you have an elite here that has probably a better sense of its own self-interest than any elite in the history of humanity, just given by how much of humanity's resources it's been able to, you know, rape, pillage, steal, and loot, and acquire, and how much power it's sat upon for, you know, for a good part of the last decades, in any event. On the one hand, you have that. On the other hand, you have the situation like you described with the UK essentially purposelessly alienating chunks of the African population and of the African elites, and you have at the same time the game that's going on in Africa. We see with Tillerson you know, being with the head of the African Union this past week, and Lavrov also, China, you know, almost on the outside looking in according to Tillerson, while on the ground China's making business deals here, there, and everywhere. There are all kinds of real competing interests between the hegemon would be, or still, let's try to maintain hegemony, West in Africa with its history of exploitation of Africa and the rising multipolar world. All of that thwarted by this ideological, you know, hang up that gets thrown, among other things. So I'm saying there's this ideological contradiction almost, and usually the ideology serves the elite. And in some places, though, it ends up being something that it slips and slides in.
Well, you're right. I mean, ideology is, when it is weak, It's used by the elite as a tool, you know, to further its own pragmatic interests. But the history of mankind knows a lot of examples when little by little ideology became the master. Instead of being the tool, it became the master, and these were the most, I would say, tragic pages in human history. I mean, it's clear that Adolf Hitler was kind of promoted and coddled by the German bourgeoisie, mm-hmm. because German bourgeoisie had some real fears of Soviet influence, right. You know, communist revolution in Germany and in other countries. That fear was, I would say, a lot more rational than the current hysteria around the so-called Russian involvement in the U.S. election.
Right.
Because people like Grigory Zinoviev or Vladimir Lenin or Leon Trotsky, they indeed wanted to influence Western countries. Right. However, the response of the German bourgeoisie was so absurd. You know, they basically made Hitler and his Nazi ideology. First, they wanted to use them as a tool, and then in the end, they were Hitler's tools. You know, they were tools in the hands of Nazi ideology. All of the German industry, all of the German war machine became slaves to this ideology. In the same way, ultra-liberal ideology now, which was primarily probably used as a tool by the American and the European wealthy classes in order to win the Cold War with the Soviet Union, you know, to offer attractive alternatives to the Cuban experiment and to the Chinese and Vietnamese experiments. In the end, now, this ideology is becoming the master of the West, pushing the West into all sorts of adventures. We have seen it already in Libya, in Syria, in Iraq, in a lot of other places. And this is the most dangerous point, you know, when the ideology starts to dictate some very dangerous, some very non-pragmatic steps. Let me give you an example, for example. Nixon in the early 70s, he had such difficult, let's call it, partners as Leonid Brezhnev in the Soviet Union and Mao in China. And Mao was a real Stalinist, figure. Very cruel, you know, a real believing communist, all kinds of difficulties for the United States. But Nixon managed to get Mao on his side of the barricade against pretty pragmatic and already not so belligerent Soviet Union. Now, Obama, more than 30 years later, 35 years later, having such sensible partners as Vladimir Putin in Russia and Xi Jinping in China, he managed to mess it up.
Right, it's
he
true.
Managed to antagonize both China and Russia, despite their elites being very, very friendly towards the United States, having property in the United States, being willing to do business with the United States. He managed to basically antagonize them both. Why? Because Obama is a liberal kind of Stalinist, you know. He's a slave. He was a slave to ideology. He could not make concessions. Not even concessions. He could not be simply. He couldn't be sensible with Russia, and he couldn't be pragmatic with China. Let me just remind you. You know, he had this very bad conflict with Russia over Ukraine, something that Obama created himself by pushing the regime change in Kiev against all odds. And then after this conflict, Putin went to China. Russia could not signed a gas deal with China for 10 years before that. You know, the Chinese demanded too small a price.
Right.
And what did Obama do? He went to all of China's enemies. He went to the Philippines. He went to other ASEAN member states. And he reassured them all against China. So the result was that China signed that gas deal with
right.
with Russia worth $400 billion.
Right.
And right. Obama managed to pull what I would call an anti-Nixon trick. You know,
that's right.
If what Nixon did was like a miracle of pragmatism, what Obama did was the opposite kind of miracle.
Right.
I mean, to get the most negative outcome out of the situation where you had the best cards on your hand.
That's right. I mean, declaration at the end of it, a declaration by the two governments of a security arrangement that they called a strategic partnership. We are now strategic partners, the opposite of what happened with Nixon.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, not only with China, but also with TPP. I mean, the whole
That's right.
thing with TPP was disastrous. You know, Obama said it was an all-encompassing, you know, agreement on the future of the Pacific. And somehow he just forgot right. to include two elephants into this into this agreement, Russia and China.
Right.
Small emissions. The result was that now no one remembers what TPP is. You know, Trump garbaged it. But the negative impact on U.S. relations with Russia and China was huge because
yep.
China and Russia suddenly got some very reliable information. You know, they've got some proof that basically the United States wants to sideline them. And they almost did it by not including them in TPP.
Yeah.
So with Africa, again, you know, I think Obama should be, again, he should enter the Guinness Book of Records. He was potentially the most popular American president in Africa.
Right.
He managed to become the least popular American leader
right.
in Africa because he insulted his father's native Kenya
right.
by giving them lectures on democracy and not being willing to meet their president for some ideological reason. So under Obama, basically the United States and Europe, they were outplayed in Africa by China
right.
of all states, you know.
Right. Well, Obama's legacy. Sorry.
Had a lot more money. China didn't have a lot more money, but China was just wiser and not so arrogant, you know, forcing its ideology on the African states.
Right.
The communists don't force their ideology on Africa. The liberals do. Alienation
right.
Africa. That's the most interesting, and I would say that's the irony of history itself.
That is. That's an interesting irony, as a matter of fact. China's policy, the communist state, the largest communist state in the history of the world, its ideology in terms of its international relations is win-win. You do what you do, what we do, we try to make each other make money. No ideology involved other than that.
Well, it's true, and basically with China, it's amazing how that country passed from radicalism, you know, Maoist radicalism of 1960s, when it was one of the least predictable states in the world,
right.
to today's situation, when China is probably the most predictable and the most rational yep. player
yep.
at the world stage.
Yep. Yep.
The problem is that China is very rational, but it lives in the irrational world, maybe not yet quite grasping that. I think that the big mistake of the Chinese authorities is that they still hope that the United States and the EU are pragmatic countries, pragmatic entities. They still try to talk business to them, you know. Unfortunately, it's like talking business to Mao in 1963, you know.
Right,
you are talking
right.
to ideologized states, you know, which are ready to waste money, kill people, lie simply because that suits their ideology. So if the Chinese want to understand whom they're dealing with right now in the United States and in the European Union, they should look at their own Chinese past and look at themselves in 1963. That would be the right kind of analogy.
Mm. Okay, so let's look at some of the things that have come out over the past weeks. The big thing, the flip-flop, or in any event, the announcement that Trump and the North Korean government are going to be meeting, and Kim Jong-un and Trump are going to meet by May. That's quite a switch from, I've got a bigger button than you do, of only a couple of months ago. What do you think is happening here? Because to me, it looks like the conditions actually exist for this now for the first time in a long time in both Koreas and in the United States.
Well, I think both Russia and China should look at North Korea and learn, because Russia and China actually tried to accommodate the United States.
Yep.
Russia tried to accommodate the United States and the EU in sports. I mean, we made a mea culpa apology. We fired all of our sports officials whom the West didn't like. We tried to follow all the requirements. And the result was that we were driven from one humiliation to the other. So in the end, it looked like, Olympic Games in Nazi Germany, when it was illegal not only to produce the Russian flag, but it was even illegal for Russian athletes to boast of their medals publicly in Pyeongchang. China tried to accommodate the United States economically, and the result was, the threats of military force in South China Sea, the non-inclusion in TPP from Mr. Obama. So now let's look at Kim Jong-un. He didn't accommodate the United States. He called Donald Trump, quite appropriately, after Trump compared him to Rocket Man. Kim Jong-un made a much more, sensible comparison of Mr. Trump to an old idiot. And the result was that the United States accommodated North Korea. The North Korean team went to Pyeongchang with their flags, without any humiliations, not like Russians, even though I think everyone understands that WADA has a lot less clout in North Korea than in Russia. Let's put it mildly,
right?
The United States is most likely going to talk to North Korea seriously. This is something that North Korea has been requiring from the beginning, and the United States was unwilling to give. The United States is not yet ready to talk to Russia seriously, despite Russia being an old nuclear power and having a lot more resources than North Korea. But the United States will talk seriously to North Korea, right? So, in a way, everyone thought that Kim Jong-un was an idiot. But in reality, it's a very Christian story. There is a saying that Christ has hidden the truth from the wise people, from all these Harvard professors, and revealed it to so-called idiots. like Kim Jong-un and some other tough guys from Asian countries, who simply refused to be intimidated and who refused to accommodate Mr. Trump and the American ultra-liberal ideology. The result is that Kim Jong-un is definitely much better off now than Colonel Gaddafi, than Saddam Hussein, than Slobodan Milosevic, and all those other people who believed Harvard professors.
Looking at, you say the United States, for example, is unwilling, or Washington is unwilling to have a serious sit down with Russia, for example, and that it is suddenly willing to sit down with Pyongyang. But, that implies that there's one voice or one, body in Washington that motivates events. In fact, there's this war between pretty much the entire government and the White House on the question of Russia that's been going on since the presidential campaign in 2016. Is it possible that the reason that we're seeing forward motion towards Pyongyang is that Trump isn't vulnerable on that? In other words, there's nobody investigating whether or not Kim Jong-un put Trump in office, as they're doing repeatedly with Putin.
Well, yes, but to a certain extent, I think Russia is itself to blame for this. The problem is that Russia has been trying to become a part of the Western world. We have been trying to organize our elections democratically according to the Western standards. We treated the Western press with respect, you know, answering their questions and hoping that somehow in the end of the day they can be objective. Kim Jong-un didn't do anything like that, you know. He has elections that he likes. He doesn't contact the Western press. Basically, considering it what it is, a pile of garbage.
Right.
Basically operated by outside actors and having nothing to do with freedom of the press.
Right.
So, in a way, when Russia tried to play the Western game, the result was very negative because we, according to the Western standards, we are always in the very bottom of the table,
right,
in all the ratings,
right,
all their estimates. And then we also get accusations of meddling in the elections simply because we basically try to speak the same language. We also try to,
right,
promote women's rights and all these quotas in Russia, right, to the less extent than in the United States, but still, we are more or less playing that game.
You know, the big offense that, this is what cracks me up, following that same train of thought, the big offending act that they cited when they first started this Russiagate stuff was that RT had covered the third-party presidential candidates debate. In other words, the U.S. media has completely frozen out anyone but the Democrats and Republicans, and as a matter of fact, a private corporation conducts the debates between those two candidates. It's a private entity. And Russia, through RT, said, hey, all you presidential candidates, we'll put you on TV. Go ahead, go do your thing, and et cetera.
Yes, yes.
That was the most offensive thing that could be done to American democracy, according to the people in Congress like Barbara Shaheen.
You are absolutely right. And who is the worst Russian agent? Who is Putin's most useful idiot? That is Jill Stein.
Right.
Jill Stein, the leader of the Green Party of the United States. You know why? Also because
she ran for president.
She participated in the debate, which was organized by RT at the
right.
last election.
Right.
Instead of discussing Mr. Obama versus Mitt Romney, right?
Right.
The previous election, the viewers of RT could watch Gary Johnson, and they could watch Mr. Anderson and Jill
right.
Stein.
That's right.
And their debate was a lot more interesting.
That's right. I mean, it was at least interesting. Whether it doesn't even have to relate to the others. This is a conversation with four American politicians discussing American policy.
And it was such a terrible meddling move by Russia into the stupidity of American elections. You know, the worst thing that you can do to the world of stupidity is to behave differently. That is really destroying the whole idea of American elections. You know, instead of two guys like Mitt Romney and Obama, I mean, two potential war criminals,
right,
trying to outdo each other in who of them will first call China a currency manipulator, who of them will first call Russia the most dangerous geopolitical foe. Mm. As a result, both of them did it. But it was so exciting to watch them. You know, they were like Siamese twins. And instead of that, you watch just some real debate between Jill Stein, Anderson, and Gary Johnson. Awful, awful. Real meddling.
That's terrible. All right. Dimitri, appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And I hope to speak with you again very soon.
Thank you, my friend.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.